Derrick Henry trying to get the big guy going, and he's going. And when I say going, he might go all the way. Nobody's going to catch him. Derrick Henry. Chris Jackson in there for Farley. The throw and the catch. Touchdown. If they don't get this here, could be the ball game. Allen leans forward, and I don't think he got there. Naquan Jones stuffed the hole.
The Titans and Bills played a classic on Monday night last season. This year, they'll be part of a special Monday Night Football doubleheader in Week 2. Earlier today on Good Morning America, our Joe Buck and Troy Aikman announced that there will be two games on Monday night on September 19th. First, the Titans traveling to Buffalo at 7:15 on ESPN, then at 8:30 on ABC. It's the Vikings at the Eagles. Two games and over 4 hours of football on one night on two of our networks. Such a special opportunity for fans. Makes you really excited for football. Welcome to NFL Live. There's a lot more on Week 2 coming your way, but we have a very special guest today. We're so glad to have Luke Kuechly, the 7-time Pro Bowl linebacker. He's here with us today, and we're putting you to work today. You got a lot to do. You're stuck with us
so far.
Yeah, well, maybe that's because you didn't spend very much. Yeah, I was gonna say we have the same joke. You didn't spend much time with Dan. All right. Also later, the reason why this Ravens team reminds Luke of his 2015 Panthers that went to the Super Bowl. But first, let's get back to Week 2, you guys, in Monday Night Football. We start with the Titans and the Bills on ESPN. And Luke, the big story with the Titans losing AJ Brown. What do you think the offense looks like early on?
I think early on Week 2, that's when this game's happened, and it's gonna be a lot of Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry early and often. They get Treylon Burks, they get Robert Woods. Obviously, Tannehill's coming back. Rough taste in his mouth with how the season ended. But I think early in this game, you're going to see Derrick Henry feed him the ball, get him going early.
When I think about this pass game now with Ryan Tannehill, Luke, you mentioned the poor performance in the playoffs. This was an offense that was built, you know, in the one-on-one pass game, so to speak, because everyone's so committed to stopping the run. And they had Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. It was like, hey, you guys are going to get one-on-one matchups. Just go win. You know, go win on a comeback or a go route or a slant or something like that. Well, now that they have Robert Woods coming over from the Rams and Treylon Burks, who they drafted out of Arkansas, I don't really see those guys as one-on-one dominant receivers. They're more kind of, can we get creative with these guys? We want to get them usage, get them touches, rather than line them up outside the numbers and go win on the perimeter. And I think that's will be the one of the things that I'll pay attention to in that game is how quickly Tennessee gets an understanding of those guys. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, when it comes to, like, the Tennessee run game, from your vantage point, why is it so hard to stop Derrick Henry? Is it strictly the size, or, you know, we always hear it's so difficult to tackle in the fourth quarter?
Well, I think you got to do it every snap. You watch that Bills game from last year. They were good, they were good, they were good. And then he found one crease and busted it, and that blew the game out of the water. And for Derrick Henry, arm tackles don't work in the fourth quarter. Early in the game, when you're strong, you have everything with you. You can grab him, pull him down by a leg or an arm. But as the game progresses, he's so big and powerful and strong that you can't just get on him because you're going to slide right off. So as the game progresses with Derrick Henry, not only does he get stronger, but a lot of guys get worn on throughout the game. And one crease for him is a touchdown.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like all this time we're wondering, why can no one bring him down in the fourth quarter? It's those arm tackles. On the other side, though, the Bills have largely the same personnel. They do not have Brian Daboll anymore as the offensive coordinator. How big a deal is that, you think?
Well, I think when you go to a new coordinator, where did he come from? Ken Dorsey obviously grew up in that system with them. Josh Allen's familiar with him, and then you bring in Joe Brady to be the quarterback's coach. I think the one thing that is going to change moving forward is the flow of the game, how the game gets called. And the one thing that I don't think people are going to talk about a whole lot is Josh Allen wears the green dot in his helmet, so he gets all the communication from off the field. Who's in his ear? Is it Joe Brady? Is it Ken Dorsey? Does that change from last year? Just that presence in your ear throughout the game is a big deal. I've had multiple guys when I was playing that would call plays in from the sideline. And it's a big deal. You got to get used to them on game day. So for Josh Allen moving forward, the offense isn't going to change, but the cadence throughout the game will.
I want to watch some of the role players that Buffalo has in their addition to the offseason. I think, number one, Jamison Crowder replaces Cole Beasley in the slot. How quickly he gets on the same page with Josh Allen, really pre-snap almost. Cole had this great feel because he's better with the ball in his hands. Then O.J. Howard steps in as the number two tight end, not having to be the number one with Dawson Knox as their number one. And then James Cook, who they drafted as really the Alvin Kamara type of role. So the addition of a slot receiver that's a little bit more of a playmaker with the ball in his hands, O.J. Howard, and then that pass-catching tailback. I actually think their offense is interesting because for you know, the Brian Daboll era, it's really been 10 personnel or 11 personnel, one back, no tight ends, or one back, one tight end. I think that because of the addition of these guys, you could see this offense going two tight ends on the field, three wide receivers, no backs.
Wow.
You know, and breaking into that empty personnel, getting you as a defense to say, oh, come, there's two tight ends on the field. Do we have to get linebackers on the field? I could see them going two tight ends, two tailbacks in 22 personnel, and again, breaking the formation into empty and really putting defenses in binds, just matching that personnel grouping.
You know, you guys think that Josh Allen enjoyed having Brian Daboll. In the 4 years with Daboll, Josh Allen became the first player in NFL history with 100 touchdown passes, 30 rushing touchdowns, and that was just in his four career seasons, first four career seasons.
Accuracy issues.
Pretty well. Yeah, there you go. All right. yeah, who said that? Let's go to the second game on ABC on this second week of football in the NFL, the Vikings and the Eagles. Dan, all the pieces around Jalen Hurts, what does this offense look like? You got a lot of guys you're going to have to get the ball to.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Nick Sirianni, their head coach, knows Jalen Hurts now, knows what he's good at, what he's not good at. He has the ability to spend the whole offseason allowing him to play to his strengths. With the addition of A.J. Brown now, this is a little bit different than the Tennessee Titans that I was just referencing. This is a team that offensively is going to go, if you want to play us in man, we got the guys that can win man coverage now. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and then the run game with Miles Sanders. You're going to get into these really unique formations that allow the run-pass option game or the zone read game. Dallas Goedert still such a owner in zone coverage of knowing when to sit and when to run. So this is an offense that in situational football, in my opinion, Luke, is going to be really good. Going to be tough to tackle. But in third and three, because Jalen is such a good weapon and now they have man-to-man winners, you can really have a wide open playbook situationally as an offense.
Well, I think the RPO game comes in for these guys. And from the defensive perspective, it puts you in such a bind. You
play the run. Teaches why the RPO for a linebacker is so difficult to play against.
Because it's up to Jalen. He's going to make the decision when to give it, when to throw it. So when we were playing, we always tried to say alignment is key. Alignment allows you that extra half step to make sure either you can you go in the run game or you're going to sit back in the pass game. And a lot of it's based off of alignments. A lot of it's based off landmarks in that offense. So if you're Jalen, you sit there and I suck up, I'm going to hit it behind you. So for me is, where can I align and put myself in position to be successful, whether it's run or a pass?
Would you tell your linebackers alignment-wise to align more for the pass and react to the run, or more for the align more for the run and react to the pass when you're playing Philadelphia in the RPOs?
I'm going to align for the run, react for the pass, because I can sit and be patient in the run game. And that gap, that offensive line is always going to move. So if I can cheat and put myself to where that gap is going to move to, then I can react to the pass. But the more I'm stagnant, the more I sit in one spot, that gap's going to move, and then I'm going to be out of touch for both, not only the run game, but also the pass game.
It's fascinating. With all the pressure on Jalen Hurts because of how they've surrounded him, what does he do with it? I actually think he's going to take that bull by the horns and prove a lot of people wrong. All right, we got a lot more coming your way. We've got a little taste of that 2022 NFL schedule, but Thursday we have the whole thing with our NFL schedule release show. That's at 8 Eastern on ESPN2 and ESPN+. The NFL Network also has coverage. I'll be hosting alongside Teddy Bruschi, Damian Woody, and Adam Schefter, special guests of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, our Monday Night Football crew, and we'll take you through each of the team's schedule as well as talk about the biggest matchups. This is a two-hour special. Don't miss it. We're just getting started on NFL Live. The Jets, Seahawks, and Colts all share something in common. They think their QB of the future is on their roster right now. But what do we think of their quarterback rooms? We'll hear from their head coaches later. And since we have Luke Kuechly with us today, we'll have him give us his top five toughest players to tackle. You're looking at what's about to happen right over there. You may be surprised where Derrick Henry is on this list. It's all next on NFL Live. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
His career is Hall of Fame worthy. He'll be in the Hall of Fame.
Intercepted. Luke Kuechly scores a touchdown.
See how active he is in his communication and leadership on that side of the ball.
Let's be some dogs now. Let's be some dogs.
No Dan Kuechly. That man's a tackling machine.
He just has a knack for knowing where the ball's going to be.
Kuechly.
the interception.
Luke, you are the best middle linebacker in the whole wide world.
Cross over, you getting crushed. I'm in command.
They're pretty good at what you do.
The utmost, highest respect throughout the land.
Luke! We got 2013's defensive... That was really nerdy. We got 2013's defensive player of the year, Luke Kuechly, here with us. We're going to put you to work, Luke. We got Luke's list right here. Give us your top five toughest guys to tackle when you entered the league in 2012 to now.
So we got four guys that I played against. One of the guys is not. We'll get to him in a second. But first, Nick Chubb, Cleveland Browns. He was a guy that I played against just one time, and he's kind of a throwback in my opinion. He's physical, he's strong, he's got a really good stiff arm, and that's something that you always got to deal with as a linebacker. What kind of weapons does he have as a runner? He's sudden, he's quick, and he's got better speed than you think vertically, but what sets him apart is just his physicality and how he's able to run with the ball in his hands. Number two, guy that I never played against.
Number four,
rushing champ, Jonathan Taylor.
Nice.
Thing about him, another guy, big, strong, physical, really good home run speed, and he's got great feet in the hole with the run game that they have. He's able to make a quick cut and get vertical. Some of these guys get a little bit stagnant in their footwork when they're in between the tackles, but Jonathan Taylor can find a crease, he can hit it, and he can get where he needs to go. Number three might be a little bit unpopular.
Whoa.
But Derrick Henry, never got a chance to play against him in a game, but we had a inter-squad scrimmage against him, and we got him in the preseason. Obviously, his resume speaks for himself. When I talk about weapons for running backs, he's got a lot of them. He's got size, he's got speed, but that stiff arm is something that everybody's seen. And he keeps it out, and he keeps defenders away from his body. And when you're that strong and you're that powerful, the ability to keep people away with those long arms is super beneficial. Number two, a guy that I played against a lot inside the division, Alvin Kamara. He's so difficult because he can align in different spots in that Sean Payton offense. And with Kamara, he's one of those guys that I think that he almost invites contact. He wants guys on his body. He wants guys close to him. He's almost like he's covered in grease. Guys just slide right off him. And I wouldn't say he's necessarily super sudden as much as he is smooth and great flow. The last guy is one of my favorite guys I ever played against, Marshawn Lynch.
Okay.
Wow.
I think he's got the full package, big, strong, physical, but his running style is relentless. That picture right there, I always tell everybody, when we played Marshawn, the most important thing for us was to get bodies around him. A lot of guys weren't wrapping him up one-on-one, but just how he's built physically from his waist size to his chest size and how powerful he is right in here in a little bit of an area is what makes him so difficult because he invites contact, he can sink, and then get off of it. And that's what makes him so difficult, just his power, his speed, and his ability to keep guys away from him. So that's my list.
I love your list. Where is your teammate Christian McCaffrey?
Hey, I didn't want to be a homer, but okay. I put Christian right up there too. I mean, the first time we had him in training camp, he had me in a one-on-one drill, twisted up five or six times, and I would put him on the list, but I don't want to be labeled a homer, but he's right up there as well with some of the top guys in the league right now.
All right, so Christian, don't worry. You would have been number one. Dan, what do you think about Luke's list?
Well, first of all, you're good at television because I learned. I actually have never heard weapons that running backs have. Like, this is when you said Jonathan Taylor's feet in the hole, I learned something, so I loved that. Where would Cam Newton rank?
Ooh.
Oh, man. So Cam reminds me a lot of Derrick Henry. Size, weight, speed, and Cam's ability to keep guys off of him. But I think what a lot of people think with Cam is he's a quarterback, I'm gonna be able to hit him.
Right.
But Cam, we always talked about if we saw Cam get hit or hit somebody early in the game, Thomas and I would be sitting on the bench like, all right, we're good to go.
So is it safe for me to say that you think Kamara's the toughest tackle backwise in the league right now? Or is it, because I know this is your list.
Yeah.
You think he's the toughest tackle in the league right now?
Well, I've never played against Jonathan Taylor, so okay. I can't say. But I talk about a lot guys that I have a lot of history with. And these two guys I have the most history with, Marshawn and Kamara. And Kamara is so fluid and has so much shake that he's hard to get on. And then once you're on him, you really got to make sure you wrap him up because his lower body, the balance and the strength down there is what really sets him apart from a lot of guys.
I feel like people forgot about Kamara toward the end of the year last year just because of what was going on with the Saints in general. Don't forget about this guy. Did you think about putting any receivers on this list?
Well, there's one guy that, just like Kamara, that we played against a lot, Julio Jones.
Okay.
And he was a scared. This is a great picture right here. I remember this. We were in quarters. This is 2015. And I remember sitting right here, and the ball's
get
in
it.
The air.
Oh.
I just remember hearing a really loud smack. And it was Julio catching it, and then the crowd went crazy because we were in Atlanta. And I remember sitting on my knee right there and being like, I don't know.
I'm in perfect coverage.
I don't know where he came from.
I covered
from,
him 60 yards downfield.
And you know what the best part is? I get to the sideline and sit on the bench, and our coach pulls up the little surface and says, hey, you need a guard in there. I'm like, well, obviously.
Yeah, I was trying.
And that was the only game
who
that we
the
lost.
Coach? Who do we need to
Yeah, right?
Yeah,
that's the
come
only
on.
Game we lost in the regular season. So,
oh, that man, that's right. 2015.
It was all good.
What was the score of that game?
Honestly, I don't remember.
Man, that's a weird question.
I wanted to see if it was a one-score game.
Well, it could have been close. Oh, now you're just trying to add pain to the whole thing. He's so rude. I know. I actually am a Falcons fan. I will say the funniest part about that is the large smack you heard over your head. All right, let's get Adam Schefter in here. He's joining us with some of the top stories going on in the league right now. Adam, take us through them. Let's start with Aiden Hutchinson.
Well, Laura, earlier today, the Detroit Lions signed the second overall pick in the draft, Aiden Hutchinson, to a four-year, fully guaranteed standard rookie contract worth $35.7 million, which got me thinking, I don't think there's ever been a graduate from the University of Michigan who left school and was set to make $35.7 million. So Aiden Hutchinson sets an unofficial school Michigan record today. Good job by him and the Detroit Lions getting their number two overall pick signed. And how about a tip of the cap, a graduation cap, to the Giants running back Saquon Barkley, who years after he was selected high up in the draft, goes back to school and graduates from Penn State this past weekend, receives his degree, didn't have to do that. Well done by Saquon Barkley on a weekend of graduations. Saquon Barkley, one of the more notable names, graduating from Penn State. And earlier today, the New York Giants did the inevitable. They released the veteran cornerback James Bradbury after just two seasons. He was once their prized free agent acquisition, and now he's back on the free agent market looking for a home. There are enough teams around the league that need cornerback help. He should get some money here as well, but Bradbury has officially released the Giants needed that cap space to go ahead and sign some members of their own rookie class.
I love it. Adam, we got some more news here. We just got in some word in, guys. That game against the Falcons was a one-score game, 20-13. Sorry, Lou.
It was a pivotal.
Come on.
I think the Hall of Fame is safe, though.
You're all good. But, of course, you know what? That just speaks to, like, the excellence where you still remember those moments, you remember those plays, and you kind of think back, and what could I have done, you know?
Hey, I'll tell you what. I've got that picture sent to me a million times from my buddies with Julio catching that ball
great
over
friends.
My head. So, hey, I'm you know?
Dan, you got right involved in that. I'm sure some people are about to tweet it at you, too. Sorry about that.
I'm sure
all right,
will.
The AFC West is packed, guys, with new offensive superstars. So how on earth do you slow these guys down? Well, good thing we got Luke here today. He's going to give you the blueprint on limiting their firepower. That's next on NFL Live. We'll be right back.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
The Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight with a couple of Game 4s on ESPN and the app. The Rangers and Penguins begin at 7 Eastern with Pittsburgh up 2-1. Then the Predators host the Avalanche with Colorado going for the 4-game sweep. The road to the Cup rolls on. Let's get to the Chiefs as we talk about a couple teams that are in action this week with some rookie camps. And Tyreek Hill is what they're dealing with trying to replace. We look around the AFC West and some of these really, really competitive teams. Tyreek Hill helped the Chiefs win 6 straight AFC West titles, but won't be as easy without him. Hill was traded to the Dolphins in March. The Chiefs signed Juju Smith-Schuster and Marquez Valdes-Scantling to help replace that production. They made 2 first-round picks in the 2022 draft, both on defense, despite our own Mina Kimes advocating for a trade-up to get a receiver. We got our quarterback and middle linebacker Luke Kuechly here. Let's run through the strengths of each of these high-powered offenses in the AFC West, how to defend them. So, Dan, start us off on offense with the Chiefs, what it looks like now.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an unknown of how they are going to be. So I would say dominant offensive line and some size at the wide receiver position with Juju and MVS coming over. What's the best way that you think to slow us down?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the division has dictated how they think they're going to stop the Chiefs. All these teams within the division have two elite pass rushers on the edge.
Right.
So I think their mindset is we're going to rush four, we're going to keep Patrick in the pocket, and then we're going to cover as well as we can. That blueprint was kind of laid out in the Super Bowl when they played the Bucks.
Yeah.
So if I'm playing the Chiefs and I got these two edge rushers, I'm going to let those guys go, try to get them in third down and long, and then play as good a coverage as I can, all with the mindset of where's Kelce at? Where's Travis Kelce at?
So your goal is to just shut Kelce down early on, make me, Patrick Mahomes, go to another weapon. I want to ask you real quickly because what we've seen over the last real two seasons is defenses go, okay, we're going to play those two high shells, right? A little bit, you grew up in the Tampa 2 system,
yeah.
Two deep middle. Is that something that you would do as well, though, play in that two high shell and force Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, and that offense to just – run the football as methodically as possible?
We'll just see how patient they are.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways, I think, in that two high to be a little bit more sound on the run game. But the moment you go single high, you're given one-on-ones outside to those receivers.
Yeah.
With Patrick Mahomes, that's easy pitch and catch. But if I'm teams playing them, I'm playing some sort of aggressive match, two high zone coverage, and letting my guys on the edge go. And that's why you pay them all that money, is to affect the quarterback.
Sure. You think Patrick Mahomes has heard too high enough lately?
Take a shot every time.
I know. All right, let's continue with the AFC West. The Raiders also made a major wide receiver move, acquiring Davante Adams from the Packers for a first and second round pick. He'll be reunited with former college teammate Derek Carr under new head coach Josh McDaniels. And Vegas also added to the defense this offseason. They signed Chandler Jones and traded for Rocky Asin. So, Dan, as we continue our theme here, what's the strength of the Raiders offense to you?
I kind of phrase it Tay and tight ends. You know, the multiple tight ends and Davante Adams. You know, if I'm the Raiders, I'm taking Darren Waller and Foster Moreau, putting them in a package together with Davante Adams. Luke, how are you even lining up or matching that personnel grouping, knowing I can throw and run out of it?
Well, the thing that's tricky, when you get two tight ends like that that can catch the ball, you immediately think coverage, and that dictates towards nickel packages. But the size that these guys have, you can't play with a traditional nickel. A 5'10 guy just isn't big enough to get it done. So what I would do, and what we did when I was in Carolina, is you bring either an athletic linebacker in, or you bring a safety down, and he comes and he plays that nickel spot as the extra DB, but he's a bigger, more physical body. He can still cover those guys, and if they line up in any kind of power set to run the ball, he's stout enough in that two tight end set that he can stick it in there, hold a gap, and make a play in the run game. Yeah,
see, that's the challenge.
Like,
you have to. There you go.
Yeah, he
big
said it earlier.
Nickel.
Yeah.
You got to have the people.
Yeah.
You have to have the human beings, really, before the ball is ever getting snapped to match up. And they have a third tight end as well. That's why I think the Raiders' offense could be so difficult. It's almost like the Ravens from years ago.
You cannot overlook them in this AFC West. You can't overlook the Chargers either. Their offseason started by re-signing one of Justin Herbert's top weapons. This got overlooked a little bit. Giving Mike Williams a 3-year deal with $40 million guaranteed. They added Pro Bowlers Khalil Mack and J.C. Jackson to the defense. And L.A. drafted an offensive lineman in the first round for the second straight year. They took guard Zion Johnson. You like him. 17th overall. Get the BC shout out in. Dan, what about the Chargers, their strength offensively?
Shots and screens. You know, and with Justin Herbert, we want to take shots. I want to push the ball downfield with Mike Williams and Jalen Guyton, just really take our chances, but also with Austin Eckler in our screen game. So what's the best game plan, Luke, to really defend against an offense that can stretch the field so much?
Well, I think what we always try to do, and I think about, is if they're going to keep extra guys in and max protection, they're going 6-7 man protection.
Yeah, yeah.
How can we get extra rushers going at the quarterback? And to me, that kind of talks to man coverage. So we get two tight ends in. They stay in the block. I send two extra additional rushers. They go through their coverage to the quarterback, and you talk about the screen game. That man coverage look helps with that too, because if I'm playing backside backer and they're throwing the screen game, my eyes are only on Eckler. Where is he going? I'm going to get to him as soon as I can. But at the end of the day, in the screen game, what everybody talks about is defensive line retrace. So it's kind of a
shout out to Marcus Spears.
That's right. It's kind of a double-edged sword for these defensive linemen. We say get to the passer, but the moment you know it's screen, we need you to turn and run.
Okay.
So they're in a difficult spot. But if you can play man coverage and get additional rushers and then hug up on screen plays, that's how I treat that.
I'm fascinated by that answer because I thought you would have said when I'm like in a personnel or a formation to take my shots to play coverage and force me to check it down. But you're saying no, get the ball out of my hands, so to speak, and make me make a really accurate and almost precise throw and come after me.
Yeah, if you're sending four and I got seven in protection, you're
I got no shot to get
Herbert,
home.
I'm going to find whoever I like, and then I'm going to check it down. But if we can send, if they keep seven in and we send six or seven guys, we're in good shape.
Man, by the way, Swagoo could retrace with the best of them. So we got to shout out our big fella.
I want to see the big fella.
He's on NFL
nowadays.
Live tomorrow. Hey, the Broncos, our final team here, made one of the biggest splashes this offseason, getting Russell Wilson from the Seahawks for three players and two first-round picks. Wilson will play under first-year head coach Nathaniel Hackett, who was the Packers OC the last 3 years. And on defense, Denver added Randy Gregory, remember that, in free agency, and Nick Bonito in the draft. So finally, the Broncos offense with Russell Wilson at the helm, Dan, it's going to look different. What does it look like?
It's do whatever's necessary. I think it's the most balanced and I call it proficient offense in the division. So I'm an offense that, because of Nathaniel Hackett bringing over that Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, Gary Kubiak scheme, I could do whatever I want, really. So the run game with that stretch action and then the big chunk play action pass. As a defense, are you just, hey, we got to stop the run? What's the balance there for you guys?
Well, that run sets up the pass for those guys, and you think about it, it's a lot of coaching points in this kind of an offense. We need guys on their feet, a lot of backside cuts in those wide zone looks.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's important, too, are setting edges. The more that outside zone can stretch to the sideline, the more space there is.
What
for
is
that
setting the edge to you?
So you get a defensive end on the open side of a formation with like an offensive tackle. He's trying to set that edge and make that play get vertical sooner. Okay. If he can set the edge, by that I mean instead of the ball running all the way to the sideline, if he can sit down and hold it, that ball has to cut up quicker, and that makes the play easier. But the more that ball spreads horizontally on your defense, the more trouble you are, and that's what they try to get to.
What's the biggest challenge with the play action game out of that? Is it the overcommitment to stop the run, or is it just giving, like, what's the greatest challenge for you guys?
I think the mindset on that is they're having success running the ball. You come to the sideline, your coach is, we got to stop the run, we got to stop the run, we got to stop the run. And then your mindset when you get in the game is, first time I see any run look, I'm downhill at the ball.
Yeah.
And then boom, now it's play action and the tight end's already behind you. So yeah. Stopping the run is the most cliche thing that you hear in football with this wide zone stuff, but it's so true, because if you can't stop the run, that you can run wide zone, you can run play action, you can take a shot, makes everything way more difficult.
Yeah, there's a lot of different versions of run game, right, to your point. All right, so now all these AFC West teams have the recipe to stop the other team's offense, so thank you, Luke, for that.
I wish it was that easy.
Right, it's
credit
simple.
To the big fella.
Hey, with Week 2 Monday Night Football slate released, it has us excited to see some new faces under the lights. Find out who we can't wait to see in Titans, Bills, and Vikings, Eagles. That's next on NFL Live. Keep it right here.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Glad you're with us on NFL Live. Let's read and react to some of the latest happenings around the league. We begin with the Jets. They had rookie mini camp this past weekend. Incredible draft they just had, as you're looking at the rookies out there. But listen, it all revolves around Zach Wilson, their quarterback. And here's head coach Robert Saleh on the latest from his signal caller.
Zach looks good. He's definitely hit the weight room. Looks beefy. In a good way. He's definitely filled out. So, but he's still got all his looseness and throwing the football and zip and all that stuff. So he looks good. A lot of guys look good, and you can tell a lot of guys have put in a lot of work since January, and they're ready to roll.
Dan, beefy, just like you.
I was just going to say, never had a coach speak about me like that.
Oh, sorry about that. Expectations for Zach Wilson this season?
Hi, I think Zach Wilson is set up for his second year, very similar to what Patrick Mahomes was in his second year. All right, they got three first-round offensive linemen now on their roster, with Laken Tomlinson coming over as a free agent from San Francisco. They got two first-round receivers, Corey Davis being one, and then the addition of Garrett Wilson, C.J. Uzomah that's been added at the tight end, and Jeremy Rucker, and really a first-round tailback in Breece Hall. I think Zach Wilson is set up to have a massive leap, a second year in the offense that traditionally gets quarterbacks to play maybe a little bit better than their talent. If Zach Wilson is even remotely close talent-wise to what the second pick in the draft should be, we're talking a monster leap similar to the one that Patrick had 4 years ago.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because Salah did talk about the physicality. He also said that the mentality of Wilson has been a lot better.
I've heard that. I have heard that he has taken complete ownership of their organization this offseason.
Love to see it. Now let's see what he does in the field. Let's get to the Seahawks, you guys. Something Baker Mayfield connected to Seattle is a likely landing place, and we wondered if they'd grab a quarterback in the draft. They didn't want to do that, but here's Pete Carroll with more on not trading for a QB.
I don't see us, you know, making a trade for anybody at all. I don't see that happening. But we're certainly going to continue to be open to the chances to help our club. And meanwhile, we're just going to be battling and competing our tails off. But that, you know, there's always a possibility. So we keep open to that.
Always the possibility. Adam, what is the Seahawks' plan at quarterback?
Well, Laura, I think first and foremost, they want to run the football more. But once we get past that, they do right now have Geno Smith on the roster, and they like Geno Smith more than people do. And I think that they have Drew Lock on their roster. And Pete Carroll himself said that if Drew Lock were in this draft, he would have been the top quarterback selected in his opinion. So clearly they have more love and appreciation for the two quarterbacks on their roster right now than others do. But that doesn't mean they couldn't revisit it if one of these quarterbacks happened to be cut. But right now, they're preparing to move forward with both players. And it looks like with Geno Smith having the experience in that offense, he get the first nod, but this will be a battle, I would think, all during training camp.
All right, something to keep an eye on. Let's keep talking quarterbacks. Heading to Indianapolis, where Matt Ryan has already been compared to Peyton Manning by multiple people. Big shoes to fill there, even for a veteran like Ryan. And Colts coach Frank Reich piled it on, too. He said, I cannot even tell you how refreshing he is, talking about Matt Ryan. Very strong opinion that he has, but also very engaging, very humble, like very humble, but very strong. It's just good. It's a really good dynamic, very professional in every way. And it's just a collaboration. But he also understands he's coming in and learning a new offense, and he feels that right now. He feels it. That was me doing my Frank Reich impersonation. Luke, you played against Matt Ryan. How do you think he fits in with the Colts?
Well, I think the one thing that he didn't mention that I'm sure Frank Reich agrees with is just how competitive he is.
Yeah.
Matt loves the game. He loves competition. And I'm sure he honestly loves learning a new offense at this point in his career. But if you look at the Colts, they've had such instability at that position ever since Andrew Luck retired.
Yeah.
And now you get a seasoned veteran, league MVP, Super Bowl, won playoff games. He brings some stability, and he can get the guys going throughout the whole week. Hey, he can bring guys in on a Tuesday. On a Wednesday after practice, he gets a group of guys together. He can teach after, you know, they get out there and they run their five-play set. They come off to the sideline. The coaches don't even need to come over.
Yeah.
Matt can coach them all up, get them where they want them, adjust some routes, got some young receivers. Just a good veteran presence that's seen everything. There's nothing that he's going to get in a game that's going to either make him uncomfortable or he hasn't seen. And he's just the ultimate competitor. And I think with what they've gone through at the quarterback position the past few years, to have Matt in there is really good for
him. Yeah, it's almost like his career has that built-in clout where he on those Tuesdays, week two, you got to get in and we got to get some work in or something on the sideline.
You're going to say no to him?
Yeah, exactly. His career kind of speaks to you not only doing that, but also knowing he's going to get you better to do it. I think the phrase that comes to mind is lead over carry. You know, all Chris Ballard, their general manager, want, and all Frank Reich, their head coach, wants is the quarterback to lead the offense, not think that they have to carry the offense. And I think on the field, that's a little bit of what Carson Wentz missed. And Matt Ryan's kind of in that perfect role where he just wants to be part of the offense, allowing that to star rather than the quarterback to be the star. And I think one of the things that is somewhat of a similarity, you can kind of speak to this a little bit, Luke, the carryover from Atlanta is the size of the people that they have on the perimeter now. I don't think their weapons are incredible, but Michael Pittman Jr. is 6'5", 225. And their second-round pick, Alec Pierce, out of Cincinnati, is 6'3", 220 pounds. And Mo Alie-Cox, their tight end, is 6'5", 275. And when I think of that as a quarterback, all I think about is ball placement. I just need to make sure that I've got ball placement that at least gives them a chance and throw that catchable type of ball. Almost, listen, they're not Julio, but almost too similar to what he had Julio in Atlanta.
Well, Pittman, that catch radius on him is huge.
Yeah.
If you're Matt Ryan, how comfortable, I don't care who you are, Matt Ryan throwing that ball to him, how comfortable are you throwing it knowing that if he's got a backer on him, he's got that huge radius that just get it close.
Just throw it to a spot.
Throw it away from the backer.
Yes.
And that's one thing that was tricky about playing backer is you might have great coverage, but a better ball beats coverage every time. Hmm. And with those big, long, athletic guys, man, if you're Matt Ryan, you got a great run game. They're really good up
front. Similar to what he had in Atlanta in the MVP season.
Yeah, and he can hand the ball off 25 times a game and be good, or if they need him to throw the ball 40 times a game, he's got those guys you mentioned to get it to in easy ways.
And I think Frank Reich just wants him, Reich just wants him to make the throws when it's necessary.
I was just in big moments, right? To me, that was the thing. I mean, if you look at the numbers last year, that was when Carson Wentz really failed. He wasn't terrible for portions of the season. It was really when it mattered. All right, we got a lot more coming your way here on NFL Live. But the Ravens not drafting a receiver. Ravens fans might feel worried about their offense's firepower, but our own quarterback says this has him thinking of Lamar's MVP season. Dan is going to explain next. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're so excited about this. There will be a special Monday Night Football doubleheader in Week 2 this season. And earlier today on Good Morning America, our Joe Buck and Troy Aikman announced that there will be two games on Monday night, September 19th. First, the Titans traveling to Buffalo to play the Bills at 7:15 on ESPN. Then at 8:30 on ABC, it's the Vikings at Eagles. Two games and over 4 hours of football on one night on two of our networks. A lot of changes on all four of those teams. So which new player are you most looking forward to seeing on Monday Night Football? Dan, you first.
Treylon Burks for the Tennessee Titans. You know, obviously replacing A.J. Brown. This is a guy that averaged 16 yards per touch, essentially, or catch in the SEC. And he was used in multitude of ways. Got him the ball quickly on some of the cross the line of scrimmage stuff. One-on-one, just really giving him an opportunity-type throw. Does Tennessee kind of deploy him in that aspect? How many different ways can they find opportunities to get him the football, especially early on in this game, to really set a tone for this Monday Night Football game?
I'm looking at, Dan, the Philadelphia Eagles' new wide receiver, A.J. Brown. They went out in draft night and acquired. We saw what Terrell Owens once did for the Eagles' offense, and there are people who believe that A.J. Brown can have a similar effect in Philadelphia on the Eagles' offense this year. Opens up everything, gives more opportunities to Devonta Smith, helps the running game, which was already very strong, and helps the quarterback, Jalen Hurts. A.J. Brown, the man to watch in Week 2 against the Minnesota Vikings.
All right, I'm going to go N'Kobe Dean, linebacker out of Georgia, playing for the Philadelphia Eagles. He's going to get knocked for his size. He's a little bit shorter, short-limbed guy, but most natural feel out of all the linebackers in the draft class this year. Can get to the ball, can scrape, can run sideline to sideline. Really good shake in between to escape from blockers. But I think the thing that helps him the most are the three big guys in front of him, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, and now Jordan Davis out of Georgia as well.
Ooh, let me take it from there, Luke. I'm saying watch out Kirk Cousins for Jordan Davis because he is dynamic, and I think he's going to be – I know I love him so much. I think he's going to be really playing with his hair on fire out there, trying to prove something. You saw the Eagles go and get him. I absolutely love the pick. A reminder, too, guys, that there's Monday Night Football Week 1 as well, and on Thursday we will find the entire schedule out. We will have a schedule release show on ESPN2 at 8 p.m., cannot wait to see Week 1 of Monday Night Football as well as the rest of the season. On to some other rookies, guys. The Chiefs and Ravens holding their rookie mini camps today. Both teams bolstering their defenses in the draft and taking some pass catchers as well. As you look at the rookies out there, it's so fun to see these guys finally in their NFL uniforms. The Chiefs and Ravens had two of the best draft classes this year based on pre-draft rankings. They were two of the four teams to draft three players who were in the top 40 overall of scouting final rankings. KC took Trent McDuffie, George Karlaftis, and Sky Moore with their first three picks. And the Ravens have Kyle Hamilton, Tyler Linderbaum, and David Ojabo. They got some great value out of those picks, especially too, knowing that they don't need Ojabo right away. He would have been a much higher pick earlier on had he not gotten injured. Okay, so the Ravens had a stellar draft. They're still thin at the wide receiver position, though, with Hollywood Brown being traded away on night one. What does this offense for Lamar Jackson look like?
I think two different ways. Number one, run game-wise, I think they go back to a little bit of their zone scheme, which is that kind of we're working to an area rather than in the past year or two, they did more gap stuff, more pulling people. And then pass game wise, getting Lamar back to throwing in between the numbers. That's his 2019 MVP season. He was unbelievable. QBR third in the league. And then we've seen this kind of decline in performance wise with him throwing to the middle of the field. And that's because stupid media members, not me. I don't want to say stupid media.
Come on.
Clamored, hey, we got to get the ball. Stupid. We got to throw the ball outside. And we got to throw the ball outside more. And they listened. And that's just not who they are. And I get that that's what we like the most, or that's what we've seen the most be successful pass game-wise in the league. But this is what this offense does the best. And by the way, they did it really well. So I've said this for the past few weeks. We're going to see those multiple tight ends get on the field. We're going to see the zone run game and a little bit more of the horizontal stretch. And I want to see Lamar, and I expect them to work, get back to work in the middle of the field in their pass game and dominating with their tight ends.
I think you nailed it with the two tight ends. You know, you look at who they have. Mark Andrews, obviously,
one of the best.
Stud, and then they went and got a guy this year, Charlie Kohler, out of Iowa State, 6'6" long. The middle of the field for these guys is going to be where they make all their money. And the Ravens, honestly, right now, remind me a lot of us in 2015.
Ooh.
We didn't have a true number one wide receiver, but we had a true number one tight end that basically was our number one wide receiver in Greg Olsen. He dominated middle of the field, outside the numbers. You can kind of put him wherever you want. So they might not necessarily have the true number one that most people think, but they have a tight end in Mark Andrews that can do that. And you pair him with Charlie Kohler. And then when those two running backs come back from the torn ACLs, I think they're going to be able to run the ball and attack the middle of the field. I think they'll be in great shape.
Wait, just remind everyone what happened in 2015 with that team, just in case people didn't know.
That was when Julio Jones mossed me, where Olasco keeps bringing it back.
What was your guys' record?
We were 15-1 that year.
Amazing.
And Cam won the MVP, not too dissimilar from Lamar when he when
really
he
probably Cam's really well. Best season, right?
Yeah, so, we were great.
But if you think about this style of offense, right, we just saw the Rams with that firepower and those big-time receivers. Can this style of offense that you guys are talking about here, can that win a Super Bowl? Because that's what the Ravens are looking at here.
So I think it can, because the quarterback is such a special talent and the scheme is so unique. There's a fine line, though, right? Like, I get it where people say there's no way that this offense can get through the juggernaut or the gauntlet of the AFC and win a Super Bowl. And that's fair. And there's no way this offense without a dominant wide receiver. As you see some of these guys got to step up. There's no doubt about it. Listen, when you play this style, there's a little bit less margin for error. You got to control the football game a little bit. They don't have a bona fide number one passing game. And it's hard for me to sit here and say, yes, you can win a Super Bowl that way. I just believe because they do it so well, if they are able to control those games, then they can.
Well, I think if you're going to play like that, each possession matters that much more.
Yeah.
And if you're on the defensive side of the ball, you're thinking, how can I create turnovers? How can I get the ball out? How can I give our offense short fields? Not saying that they can't go and drive, but if you're running the ball and you're throwing over the middle of the field and you're taking short completions, time just eventually just gets cut off that clock.
Yeah.
So shorter drives, shorter fields, more possessions through turnovers, I think allows them to be
real
successful.
Quick, you're saying Baltimore defensively, you're thinking how many different ways can
how
I get
can
the ball
I get
back?
The ball yeah. back to them, whether it's we shorter play well fields, on special
right.
teams, we punt
you.
Them, we hold them inside the 10. I think that puts them in a good spot.
Gotcha. All right, we got time for one more thing before we go, guys. Watch the Watt brothers working on this pit stop before the Formula One race in Miami this weekend. Let's see what these guys have going on here. I feel like they're not fast enough. Just kidding. They're pretty good. Those tires are heavy, though. Dan?
I'm just taking this confused. All in right now. How much does a tire weigh? That tire can't be
moved. I don't know. Luke, you got any guesses
pounds?
On how much the tire weighs?
I don't know. I think J.J. Watt probably wishes it weighed more than it did so he could just show off his arms a little.
Shockingly, the Watt brothers are good at something.
Yeah, you know, the Dolphins also. I mean, a lot of people had a lot of fun at the F1 races this weekend, Tom Brady included. But the Miami Dolphins did an actual pit stop pit change. It was pretty cool. It happened really fast. They went.
I'm a speed limit guy.
It was like you getting ready for NFL Live. Like, everything happened so fast because you're not actually prepared. Thanks so much, Luke. You're back with us tomorrow. So tune into NFL Live for that, and we'll see you then.
Maybe I am prepared.